It actually turns out that I wasn't going crazy, but the reality of what was happening was way worse.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 416 for the week of July 18, 2022. I am rat-like person David T. Cole, and I'm here with hollowed-out book Sarah D. Bunting.
Read it and weep.
Peekaboo champ Tara Ariano.
Peekaboo.
And sage-burning apartment purifier Robert Krutt.
Surely that's just a ghost in the walls.
No spoilers, but the ghost person is my favorite person in this show.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get to the show in just a second. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Thank you for bearing with us for the past 2 weeks while we were off. We had teased that Jeff Drake would be joining us today, but he has fallen ill with the COVID. Actually, he's not ill, but there was a positive case in his household. So we decided to take one more thing off his plate.
We decided we didn't want to chance a podcast transmission of COVID.
Right.
So we actually kicked him out.
This latest variant, you just don't know.
You really don't. So stepping in for Jeff is one of his real life friends. They've eaten steak together many times. You've also heard him here before. It's Robert Krutt. Hello, Bobby.
Hey,
Bobby. Hi, everybody.
Yay!
I hope I do Jeff justice.
Jeff Justice is Jeff's forthcoming show,
yeah.
So look for it in
Jeff
syndication.
Jeff Justice, colon, Steak Friends.
We walked right into it. Who knew?
So we're here today to talk about frogging with a PH, colon, yeah. Hider in My House.
Maybe the best title of a TV show in recent memory.
It's
Love
pretty
it.
Good. Yeah. So remember in late 2020 when we talked about the 70s TV movies Bad Ronald and Crawl Space in Extra Extra Hot Great bonus episodes, and then we put them both out together on the free feed in early 21 because everyone had to know? Turns out the phenomenon of secretly hiding in someone's house is common enough to have earned a name. It is called frogging with a PH. And Lifetime, in its ongoing campaign to make its mostly female viewers scared of the world, has made an unscripted show about it. And Frogging Hider in My House premiered its first episode July 19th with stories about James and Brittany in Honolulu and Madison and her roommates in Greensboro. That is the one and only episode that we have seen. Let's do the Chen check-in. Bobby, should our listeners watch Frogging, colon, Hider in My House?
Yes, if you like being creeped out.
Okay. Yes. Sarah?
Nope.
Dave?
Yes, but you absolutely only need to watch the one we watch, and I think you're good. But absolutely, yes. I'm going to say watch it.
I mean, I'm going to keep watching it. I don't know if that's necessarily a recommendation, because it's very junky, but it's also like there were so many times where I gasped.
Yeah, and I think we'll get into it, but I have a very good feeling that they led with their strongest contender, and it's just not going to be as good from here on out. So watch the premiere. I think it's got the best story.
For
and
sure.
And you're good.
Yes. So, Bobby, when we invited you to step in for Jeff and I described the premise of the show, you let
steak
me know.
Friend, Jeff Drake.
Steak friend. You let me know that it struck a very personal chord for you. Are you comfortable explaining that to our listeners? And follow up, are you okay?
Oh, I am quite all right. But it was funny that you asked it that particular day, because in a pretty embarrassing moment, I was taking the trash out the night before and I was in the yard. And I sensed that there was somebody following me, and I started walking faster, and they started walking faster, and it was my shadow. And I was, I walked in, I almost did not want to share that with the rest of the house when I got in. But so this really struck a chord, and it strikes a chord in our house, because I'm the only one who can watch this kind of show. I had to watch this secretly, because even the subtitles of the episodes would have freaked out anybody else in our house. So yes, this is
so
very
your
close
caption
to home.
Would be Shadow Survivor.
Yes, yes. Thank you for honoring that. Yes.
Yes. Shadow SCH.
Oh, that's good.
You also researched why this is called frogging. Please share with our listeners. Why is it?
Well, yeah, like an old man on the internet, I had to kind of Google what this term came from. And I guess it comes from the idea that, like frogs, they're leaping from home to another one.
Okay.
I don't know that that works perfectly, because some of these people are just staying in the homes for months or years even. But that's what it comes from.
Yeah, I don't think that's great, because you don't think of frogs as being especially furtive.
It should have been something that like lives in a warren.
It's more like ratting, if anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. bunny in my house.
Let's do the second as story first. It's the story of three college students living together in Greensboro, South Carolina. Dave, you had strong feelings about this one. So why don't you recap this one for our listeners? What happened in Greensboro?
All right. So there's three roommates all sharing this apartment. You got a show called Frogging Hider in My House. Guess what? There's a hider in their house. Mm-hmm. It turns out in the end, after, you know, there's bumps and strange feelings and things out of place and clothes that have been moved around and stuff like that, that the hider is hiding in one of the girls' closet and really likes to try on her clothes. And she eventually like figures out, oh, shit, he's here right now, opens it up, and they have like a casual conversation before the cops come. It wasn't really like the stingy gotcha that you would expect from somebody who hides in your house and you think probably wants to kill you, you know? Like, for me, Frogging Hider in My House immediately evoked the call is coming from inside of the house, get out kind of vibes.
For sure.
But this one was more like, I have a mental illness and it's sad and hi.
I mean, I don't even know that that one had a mental illness as much as the first story did. This one was more sad than scandalous to me. This seemed like an unhoused person who was like in desperate circumstances.
I felt the same way about that second one,
But that said, the entertainment factor comes from, let's call her roommate number two, keeps on bringing up that she thinks there's a ghost. Mm-hmm. To the point where, like, I thought that after they revealed that there's a guy trying on clothes in her friend's closet, that she would say, but still, maybe ghost, right? Like, it was just such a Scooby-Doo character in an actual, like, you know, documentary of sorts that I just couldn't believe that she was here. And she just would not give up the ghost angle. And I wanted to keep going even when they had the guy in cuffs. He's like, I don't know, it could be a ghost. Have you poked him real hard?
Sarah.
I mean, her quote was, I just kept going back to the ghost, honestly. And like, she sort of rolls her eyes at herself, but she also, like, I think she still would prefer to think that it was a ghost than what it actually was, which was a non-ghost, unhomed person messing with her friend's carefully organized kicks, which that is a felony. Sorry. Don't touch the shoes.
You know, when you write an essay back in college and you really think you have the answer to whatever, like you've read it and you've got your theory, your thesis, and then you start digging a little deeper and you're like, oh shit, I'm not sure this is it. And then you just start selectively choosing facts rather than rewrite your thesis. That is this person in relation to there's a ghost in my house and I loved her for it.
Yeah, relatable.
I don't know which would be more, like, which I would rather accept. Like, I don't particularly believe in ghosts, but I might prefer a supernatural thing to, like, a person in my house in terms of
ooh, like, given the choice, ghost or hider, I would definitely go supernatural.
Yeah.
Assuming it's not, like,
100%.
A Cthulhu kind
of thing. Malevolent, if it's just a troubled.
Yeah. You know. I mean, having lived in an apartment that was haunted by benign spirits. Mm-hmm. Definitely preferable to my roommate who was stalking a friend of mine. Like, I eventually moved out. It wasn't because of the ghosts.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing that happens, though, when they are still on the ghost tip is that they decide to burn sage and read a Bible verse.
Together. Like,
just cover all your bases. Go to all of the spiritual traditions that you're aware of.
Leave an episode of Charmed blasting. Just make sure you've done everything.
And they take so long between them too, which is what blew my mind, is that it's like the first thing happens, then it comes up 2 weeks later, then something else happens and they're scared 3 months later. It just kept getting pushed back. I would have been gone. It was so crazy.
Yeah,
we're talking minutes if it's my house. That it's like, I think there's someone living in our house. 7 seconds later, me calling the cops, like, from outside, P.S.
Yes. All right. Well, so let's get into the first story, because I think we all agree.
Absolutely.
That's the headline.
This is the one that you turn into the movie. The first time I encountered a frogging situation like that happened to somebody real was a viral video, maybe from 2 or 3 years ago, from Japan, where there's this lady that was living in it wasn't even a crawl space. It was just like a negative space above this guy's pantry.
Yeah.
And she would like come out upside down, like something from The Ring or The Grudge every night to like nibble on stuff and do whatever she would do during the night. And it took him months and months and months to figure out, to the point where he's like, all right, I have to set up a camera. And they finally caught her on camera.
And she's like, dude.
But it was just like, all right, Jesus. I get why Japan has these sort of horror movies now, because apparently it actually does happen.
Yeah.
Upside down creepy people in the night stealing your food.
Yeah. All right. So here's the first story. James and Brittany in Honolulu. Starts normal, unexplained sounds in the attic, locked doors suddenly ending up unlocked. But then they get back from a week-long vacation to find a guy in their house wearing James's clothes, holding the front door closed so they can't get in, and telling them they have the wrong house. James yanks this guy outside.
For a moment.
Yeah.
If you went up to your house and you open the door and the door opens and there's a guy saying, this is not your house, I think I might take a step back and look at the house.
I absolutely would. I'd be like, I'm sure you're right.
3207, is that my address? Yeah.
It's like, shouldn't, 427, that's where I live. Wait.
Yeah.
No.
But I think they needed to show us more of the subdivision, because there certainly are places where that's more plausible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know?
Well, they said they lived in a suburban area of Honolulu, and those areas, I mean, I'm only speaking to the Big Island, different island, but when there was a new development in that was suburbia, it was super cookie cutter. So I could believe that I would be duped into like taking 10 steps back. And then like, it's that episode of The Simpsons where the carnies close the door.
Exactly.
It's
like,
I mean, I've lived where I live for 5 years, and it took 3 of those years for me to stop picking the wrong, because they're row houses and like, we're in a row that was 5 in a row made, you know, designed by the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The cut-ins look the same. The railings are the same. Like, once you get up to the door, like, oh, our door is not red. Hi, Gary.
Whoopsies.
Hi, Eve. Sorry. Climb over the divider and go into my own home.
Painted ladies of Brooklyn. That is not.
No. Exactly. All right, back to the story.
There's a window shade with a Playboy mud flap on it.
So back to this story. James does not accept this explanation that you have the wrong house. He yanks the guy outside. They get him arrested. And then they're like, well, that was weird. But then they find out he was keeping very detailed notes on them on her computer, like an old computer that they don't use all the time. He made a video on her computer. He was planning some pretty intense amateur surgery on them because he had some beliefs. I'll just say it, and we already have. They picked the right story to kick off the series.
Yep.
Bobby, go ahead. What did you feel?
When I got the video to watch, it starts rolling. I don't watch a lot of shows like this, really, so I wasn't totally familiar with what to expect, but I was expecting something campy, cheesy, and it was. But when that comes up, it's a secret surgery. I just sat there and went, my stomach turned just seeing what was coming up. And it was really terrifying. And I think that the first part is so much, it's very well done. Well, put that in quotes, I guess, but I liked how they had the blueprint of the house. So you could see kind of where everything was going. You know, the stock footage is always cheesy, but it took me a minute to realize that they were using actual footage of the Frogger and the videos that he was making, because the font was very small in the corner. And I thought, why is the stock footage now suddenly different? And it took me a minute. And then when you realize it's the actual footage, and we can have a conversation as to whether or not that's ethical that they're using that or not, but it definitely was chill inducing that first one, when you see him actually, you know, talking about the, what was it, the omnivores and the...
Yeah, so let's explain what was in the content of his emails before we get too far ahead. So she finds her old computer that has been used, and there are notes that explain his plan for the omnivores, is what he's calling what he thinks these people are. These people are beings that he is calling omnivores, which, like, all right, we're already omnivores.
Right.
Calm down. But whatever. That's his choice.
Yeah.
He also refers to them as rat-like people.
Yeah.
And that his plan for them is sort of Mengele-esque. Let's try to make them better. And he knows he needs to perform surgery. He knows he needs to change these people. He doesn't really have any medical background, but that's not stopping him from Googling everything he needs to know.
Limb
gender reassignment surgery.
Yes.
Where do I buy a surgery table?
Yes. And so,
which he's doing naked, by the way. Like, this is the most disturbing part to me. It's It's not that this guy, it's not just that this guy was like, how to dismember you, Sarah. It's that he was doing it with his scrote on my makeup chair. Buddy, if you're going to be wearing my husband's clothes, start now. Also, is that the one where he belches and is like, excuse me? Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, what they don't say is that he was, what the species he was planning to turn them into is Ezekiels.
Don't forget, hit the bell, like, and subscribe. That's what he did. Right?
He wanted to turn them into Ezekiels, and I assume they didn't include that because that is his name. It's Ezekiel Zayas. You can Google the case.
The problem with the presentation on the show is, for whatever reason, they only went half-ass with the real stuff.
Yeah.
So every time they showed the actual video that he shot, it was all distorted and stretched from what obviously the source
and it's
was.
Him from the nose down.
You couldn't see his full face. Like, I guess that's just timid lawyers on the production side. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it's all one Google away, and then boom, you're done. You've seen it all. But
yeah,
I felt like the show wandered it both ways, and it just didn't deliver on either side of that. Like, you know, either go whole hog with the campy reenactments, or mm-hmm. show me the actual video.
There's also a detail about there's a cat in the house, which Ezekiel was trying to feed dried apricots. They were on the mainland for a week. They left the cat in the house, apparently without a cat sitter. You have to be very confident that cat's not going to leave spite poops in your bed to trust an automatic feeder for that length of time. Sarah, your thoughts as a cat owner?
Could have had a cat door.
That's true. Could be an outdoor cat.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Frogger had been, like, cleaning the cat box unbeknownst to them, so they just assumed certain things were the cat's real habits questions. That were actually the Frogger just, like, freeballing through the house, cleaning the cat litter. Also, what happened to the dog?
Right.
Okay. They mention the dog, and then they don't mention the dog. Like, you need to follow up.
Yeah.
On that detail.
There's this guy that wants to cut up my family and turn them into not rat people anymore. But let's go deep on what happened to the pet feeding schedule.
I'm just saying.
No, I'm saying that's what makes us good.
Right. Yeah. Right. The other thing is, like, if there's a cat box and a secret lurker who, as we know from toilet strat discussions regarding Bad Ronald, what if the Frogger was just dropping deuces in the cat box and hoping that it would pass, like, the rich and kind prank.
Can you bet, like, the whole family just standing over the cat box, like, what are you feeding it? What are you feeding it? Like, that was one of their fights.
Right. Earlier in the story, though, we find James sees a note on his desk calendar to the effect of, your rehabilitation starts today, find a house, clean it, be a better person, or whatever. And he's just like, well, I guess this is Brittany's way of telling me to clean more. He just cleans the house and doesn't ask her about it.
Well, you missed a detail, which was the note also made reference to gather your devices or buy devices.
Oh, yes, gather your devices, yes.
Which is the part that you can't really figure out why your wife would say that. So it was like, the guy just, like, ignored the really weird part. And it was like, well, I guess I got to clean up. Unless devices to him meant brooms and stuff, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
Also, do people not know their partner's handwriting anymore?
Yeah.
That's what I
thought. That was not mentioned. But
yeah, Bobby, what did you feel this said about their relationship?
It made me wonder, do these people know each other? Do they speak? And like Sarah said, like, if there was a note, I would know my partner's handwriting in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And also the tone of her voice. So if it said, your rehabilitation starts today, I would go, what the hell's going on? What is this? So, yeah, I was wondering what their, you know, not to psychoanalyze, but what their relationship was exactly. Through a lot of that, actually, because mm-hmm. it seemed like she was saying something was going on, and everybody else was like, oh, mom. You know, so I wondered a little bit throughout.
Not to be whatever, but I feel like HBO should have made a miniseries about this real-life aspiring human centipede creator before it remade the already existing story of The Staircase. Like, I wanted more of this. It could have been the whole hour, in my opinion.
Yeah. Put Aaron Lee Carr on it. 2 parts, 3 hours. I mean, Dave is right. Watch the first episode and then you're basically good. Mm-hmm. But this is, it's what I call waiting room on mute TV, which is like, it is built in a certain way so that if you are sitting at the vet, which is where, like, I don't know why my vet always has LMN on, but it does. But it's like, without captions, it is still legible to you. Like, you understand the rhythms of the show. Now, I watch enough garbagey, you know, 20 minutes of content spread over 41 minutes of airtime, true crime material, that this is like familiar. I understand why it is built this way. I understand who it is for and where it is going to be played. But there were some legitimately and unexpectedly to me spooky moments. Like, this isn't your house was like, oh, like I got a little like on the back of the neck. It sort of dissipates that tension by doing that. Like, we're back from commercial. Let's repeat this other thing. Let's have a reenactment that's out of focus and is stalling to get to the reveal. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think the show is well made enough that it can afford to stall. It needs to get to the Frogger Works factory faster.
Yeah.
So I would say it's not necessarily worth watching or keeping up with for me.
Yeah.
But it's like better than you expect. It's just mm-hmm. not good still.
It's right. better than I expected, just because I didn't expect how batshit the storyline of the first one was.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I feel like the series as a whole has like a Vaseline soft lens when it comes to really like the creepier parts of the story. Like, there was obviously a lot more going on with how fucked up that first one thing was with the surgeries and things he wanted to do with his family. Like, I bet there's a lot of fucking like R-rated shit going on
in that house too.
You hit page down, right? Because there's kids involved
and
stuff like that. And I understand the level they're going for here, but also it kind of felt like, okay, like the production companies acknowledge that this is both a true crime thing, but also an entertainment product in the very purest sense of it. Mm-hmm. And they delivered on that. But also, like, after watching, I'm like, okay, obviously it is 7 out of 10 creepy as presented, but this is 11 out of 10 creepy real life. And I kind of wanted that version as well, or like the after show kind of thing or
Frogging
something.
After dark. Yes, totally.
That's why I would say if you're interested in this, you can Google him. His name, as I said, is Ezequiel with a Q-U, Zayas, Z-A-Y-A-S. And the story takes some turns because they say like what happened to him after he got arrested. But it continues into nearly the present day. Like, shit continued to go on with this guy. But Bobby, any final thoughts on this before we move on?
Well, you know, I just to jump off of something Dave said, I think Dave's right. It's the form does not fit the content perfectly because I was so creeped out at this kind of basic cable level version of this story that I felt like, oh, if they really did something more in depth or really went all the way with it, it would be super freaky. That being said, I did cringe at the laptop while I was watching it. So yeah, worth at least checking out the first half of the first episode.
Yes.
I would just like them to make the roommates in the second segment hosts of something, because between the, like, you know, this woman being like, I am extremely organized about my closet and who is taking all my hairpins, like, all of this was extremely relatable. The denial about the ghost was very relatable. And also, when they decide to confront whoever is in her room with her phone, they start grabbing weapons, including like an elephant statue, which they very solemnly reenact. But I was just like, these women are my people.
Yeah.
And I would really like them to have some kind of ghost hunting or like frog busters show where they're just grabbing, like, someone grabbed a curling iron. Like, this is stupid and exactly what I would do. Please be on my television every week. A+.
All right, it's time to go around the dial talking about non-frogging shows we have watched recently. Tara, you're up first. What do you got?
I just want to briefly mention 101 Places to Party Before You Die. This is a new show on True TV Thursday nights hosted by John Gabris and Adam Pally, where it's basically they go to different, it's a travel show, they go to different cities, they goof around, they eat food, they bust each other's balls. They were on Comedy Bang Bang last week and were saying like their model was sort of like The Trip, the movies with Steve Coogan and, oh my God, what's his name?
Roy Robin? No. Roy, no, what's his name?
The other guy. Sorry to this man.
Corin? Something?
I'll look it up. someone can look it up while I continue.
Rob Roy? Am I getting closer?
Rob Brydon! You were
Rory Culkin?
You were getting closer. Rob Brydon. Sorry, Rob. Anyway, this is a very cheapo show on True TV, but what elevates it is the two of them, which who are clearly really friends in real life and are having so much fun. Dave, you watched it with me. Did you also enjoy
it? Yeah, it's got podcast vibes for sure.
Yes.
Kudos to them for having an idea as how can we spend other people's money to go around and get free food and free travel and whatnot. And they did it. And they spend 48 hours on City X and they six meals and, you know, have an activity and they do it and smoke weed and all that kind of stuff. So it's a little grittier. I mean, grittier is the wrong word, but it's not quite as antiseptic as you'd expect.
It's more adult.
From a show that would be on Food Network, Home and Gardens kind of thing. Like it has... It has people that seem real is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just a half hour in and out. And so, you know, for that length of time, I didn't necessarily need to see the footage of Gabrus falling on the ski slope three times. But it's still fun and goofy. And you know, if you don't get True TV, if you don't have cable anymore, I'm sure it will be on HBO Max once the season is over. But it's fun if you like either or both of those performers. It's good. Now, Married at First Sight is back. Before we get into the new season, as you may recall, one of the Boston couples broke up immediately upon their return from their honeymoon in the previous season. The other four all initially decided to stay together. Since then, three of those four broke up, so four out of five overall. The experts are one in five for the latest Boston season, and the one they succeeded with is a female survivor of emotional abuse and a wildly controlling man. So great, I guess. Anyway, season 14 just ended about 6 weeks ago, but the show is back already. The new season's in San Diego, which is the first time the show is on the West Coast. Preseason specials and the two first actual episodes of the season add up to 10 hours of television, which I watched. You would surely think they'd at least get to all the weddings. You would be wrong. They have not. There's still two that have not met each other after 10 hours. So here's my quick assessment of the couples. Alexis and Justin, she is very tall. So she was very insistent that one of her requirements for her husband is that he be taller than her. He's 6'8", and so far she seems to think that's too tall. Like, she's creeped out by him.
Taller.
Wow.
Taller. too tall.
Yeah, exactly. We've also seen him say on camera on multiple occasions that he has had trouble dating because women just want to know how big his dick is because of how tall he is. Basically, his personality is, I am really tall. And she seemed bored by him in their first conversation. He also kept trying to high-five her when they found points of commonality as they were initially talking. No. She told him to stop.
Get out.
Oh, no.
But at this point, they'd known each other for 20 minutes, and she was already like, cut it out, so doomed. Stasha and Nate, she is an unapologetic capitalist who owns several rental properties. She talked about the generational wealth she was creating in their wedding ceremony. Ugh. Also in their wedding ceremony, his friends made sure to say he is a freak in the sheets. Again, at the wedding. He describes his job as day trading. She has asked prospective romantic partners credit scores on first dates and cheerfully admitted as much. While she's not someone I would ever want to hang out with, she deserves better than someone as obviously full of shit as this guy is.
Do you think somebody that identifies as a day trader in that way is really just like...
unemployed.
Following Elon Musk and buying meme stocks, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I got a lot of AMC and GameStop in my port.
Yeah. Also doing bong hits like it's his job.
For sure.
As it is.
Yeah. One of the first, the big villain of F-Boy Island season one, his job was indicated as Bitcoin investor. And this is like the same thing.
Fun boy.
Yes. Fun boy island. Yep. Anyway, they're also doomed. Lindy and Miguel. She grew up in a fundamentalist Christian sect so strict she was not allowed to dance. He is a dungeon master and LARPer. The expert's rationale with these two seems to be, well, they're both weirdos, but her friends keep talking about her needing someone who's going to be able to ground her when she's spinning out, a phrase we've heard multiple times about her. They generally act like she's a baby in a woman's body, which may be accurate and also a reason she should have been screened out, doomed. Morgan and Bin, she's a nurse who does Muay Thai. He's a programmer or something. He does personal training on the side. One go-to move the experts love is to cast someone, so far it's always been a man, who is really cheap. They frame it as he's focused on building a future as proof he's going to be a good partner to someone. And they pair him with a woman who likes to travel or go to restaurants sometimes. And then the clash in spending styles obviously leads to conflict. I know why they do it. I'm just saying, cut it out. There's a scene with Ben where they shot him looking in his couch for change. Like, I know it's staged, but he still did it. And then they have over it Pastor Cal, one of the experts, commenting on how great Ben is going to be for Morgan because he's happy-go-lucky. And, like, that's not how I would describe someone who is morbidly controlling about his finances. He's also a mama's boy. Everything he says about what he wants in his wife is like, I want someone like my mom. So, red flag factory. Their wedding also had to be postponed because he got COVID. They are doomed, not because of the COVID part. Finally, Kristen and Mitch. He works for an environmental nonprofit. He lives his values. She has one of those voices where even when she's speaking, it sounds like she's yelling. She also got her dad to San Diego from wherever he lives on the East Coast and didn't tell him until he arrived that he was there for her wedding to a stranger. So likes to create drama, I guess. I wanted to work for him because he was the only one of the grooms who didn't try to do creative black tie read look like a jackass for the wedding. Like, I think he's the only one who wore socks, but she seems like a chore. Regardless, I think they probably have the best shot because he's the oldest of the grooms and seems like a mature, mellow person who is good at compromise. But we'll see. Those are our couples. Stay tuned.
A non-fungible boy island. Is that something?
No.
Okay.
No. But speaking of doomed relationships
on reality
shows. It gave
much joy, though. So.
It did. I've been laughing for the past 3 minutes.
I know.
Non-fungible boy island.
I reviewed season 2 of F-Boy Island, whatever you want the F to stand for, at Vanity Fair. We will link that in the show notes. And our latest Listen to Sassy watch-along for members of our Patreon over there, the Listen to Sassy Club, that is happening this Friday. We're going to be watching When Harry Met Sally together. So if you want to get in on that, it's only $5 for a membership in the Listen to Sassy Club. You get that perk, the monthly watch-alongs, and tons of other stuff. So go to patreon.com/listentosassy, and we'll link that in the show notes as well.
Hey, that looks good. Make it a double order. That's the line. All right, Bobby, what do you got?
Well, I was thinking about last week Emmy nominations came out, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. And, you know, award shows, they're fun, but they're so dopey. And it's so arbitrary sometimes. So to put any stock in nominations, it's a waste of time. That being said, this year it seems like one or two shows kind of grabbed up every nomination.
Yeah.
So some things that I was hoping were going to get some recognition did not. So I just wanted to acknowledge two shows that I finished recently that I think are really worth people's times. One is Reservation Dogs, which I know you all talked about it when it came out. It's just so wonderful. And it's like, I don't know that many people who are actually watching it. So I just wanted to take some time to suggest it. When it was discussed on this show, I think maybe you had only seen the first couple episodes. And one of the things that I think is so wonderful about the first season is that it starts with the kind of the comedy of the show and building the camaraderie, and you instantly connect with all the characters. But as it goes on, it becomes so much richer and moving. And by the time you get to halfway through the season, there's an episode where Bear is hoping his father's going to come visit. And of course, you can imagine where that goes. And then there's the episode, the hunting episode, that I don't want to give too much away because it'll give a lot away about the plot. Yeah. But I don't think I've been that moved by anything on TV in years. So it's a really special show because it is just funny, but it's very, very moving as well. And I was hoping that at least some of them would get nominated. Yeah. Are we going to say something?
Yes. Dave and I watched the first four screeners of season 2. It's coming out the first week of August. So we watched those while we were on our break. And it is still really wonderful. It gets into new areas with this. Those first four episodes is all we've seen so far. But yes, it's a wonderful show. It is really overlooked. And I think a lot of people were disappointed, especially when the Emmy nominations came out, that it was snubbed.
It's a special show, and I was wondering how I knew that this season's probably going to be good, but it's nice to hear that it's holding up.
Yeah,
and
it's lovely.
And then the second show is one we just finished, which is Somebody Somewhere, the Bridget Everett show, and we had had it on the DVR, and I kept saying I want to watch it, but I want to wait. I think I had a little bit of dramedy fatigue at a certain point with shows, but then once we started it, we couldn't get through it. We devoured it, and it's such a great God, I was going to say slice of life show, which is such a cheesy thing to say, but it's so realistic.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's just real people. And Bridget Everett is such a unique sort of talent, and they use her perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for us, it was fun because we saw Jeff Hiller in a comedy show in New York 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was an improv show, and there was like 10 people, and we were like, that's the guy. He's so funny. He's going to be amazing. And ever since then, every little thing he pops up in, we notice and grab it and enjoy it. So to see him have such a perfect part, I'm a sucker for character actors, so I love seeing the two of them together, and their chemistry is wonderful. And it's really moving, but it's really funny too. So those two shows, you know, awards are dopey, but it's, here's my award. Watch those two shows. They're both really great.
I mean, they already both got renewed, so like that's an award in itself, especially in this, you know, crowded marketplace. But I agree. Special is the word I would use to describe both of those shows. I probably did when we talked about them. Like, every choice Jeff Hiller makes on that show is note perfect. I mean, she's wonderful too, but he really is. You're right. He's the standout for me for sure. And the friendship that the two of those characters build is lovely to watch. It's a great friendship show.
Absolutely. So those are the two that I'd like to recommend. So, and in terms of personal plugs, I have, since the last time I was on the show, I have a new book out called Watch Me Trick Ghosts, which I am not trying to plug into the earlier discussion of ghosts in the wall. I didn't think that would work out so perfectly. And that's poetry. And then I actually have something TV related to plug for a change, which is I was on a TV show a couple months ago called History's Greatest Mysteries with Lawrence Fishburne about an unsolved case that involved a body washing up on a beach and a line of poetry in his pocket. And
That's sitting on my DVR right now. Now I extra can't wait to watch it.
It was fun. It was very surreal.
A very famous case. That's awesome. Congrats to all of us.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to do. So I actually have TV stuff to mention this time. Thank you.
Where can people find out more about you on the internet if they wanted to put in an address of some sort?
Robert-Krutt.com.
Back to the old school, because I'm an old fool who's so cool. If you want to get down, I'm going to show you the way. Boom. There it is. Let me hear you say,
Coop, there he is. Coop, there he is. Coop, there he is.
You know I had to. Okay, the latest D.B. Cooper property. D.B. Cooper, : where are you in Tarot Bang?
Wow. Is it animated?
No, and that's an oversight. Look, just for starters, DBC material going forward needs to start thinking way outside the box with the titling conventions. I said this on Twitter. I said this in my review. I will say it again here. It is always some variation on where are you? Where is he? Where's the money? The hunt for? The search for?
DB Cooper,
The journey into the transverse colon of case closed, case reopened, the complete case file. Who is DB Cooper? I am DB Cooper. I'm not. I'm also not the Zodiac. I am the last person who's going to sit here all SEO says what? But for real, if you have a DB Cooper project, start getting some kind of creative so that I can distinguish your C+ not totally necessary rehash of the case from the dozens of others. Just on the History Channel, I was a teenage D.B. Cooper. Everybody loves D.B. Cooper. Beyond the Valley of the D.B. Coopers, Bride of D.B. Cooper, Ready Cooper 1, Inglorious Coopers, anything. Help me help you. That did not occur here, but DBC:way is good. It's not necessary, but it's good. It's directed by Marina Zenovich, who did that Lance Armstrong docuseries. She did a Roman Polanski documentary I quite liked about 10 years ago. It's got a whole sequence that's basically a Buffy forum squabble between two Cooper crackpots, but the lesser of the crackpots is going to sound super familiar, so I will save you the trouble. It's Jim Forbes, who used to narrate Behind the Music, which makes the whole thing even more surreal when he's like door stopping some suspect. And you're also hearing contemporary news footage voiced over by Bill Curtis. There's a very weird edit around of a certain recent true crime disgraceo that is actually quite subtle if, you know, your true crime newsletter hadn't been working on a story about this sex pest recently. So when he doesn't even get a chyron and they kind of are trying to like cut the frame around him, that's sort of interesting. Like, I wonder how close to the premiere they were editing around that guy. There's some interesting meta things going on and some worthwhile commentary on where the line is in true crime content between looking for the truth and marketing your confirmation biased conclusion. But, you know, they don't find the guy. They don't find the rest of the money. It's Netflix. It should have been 3 episodes or a 2-hour feature. It is longer than that. It is very good. It is a pleasure to look at. Visually, and if you haven't engaged with Cooper content before, Coop Tent, is that anything? This is a solid sit for a beginner, but if you've watched anything else about the case, it's not necessary, / you can watch it at 1.25 and you'll be all set. Like I said, I reviewed it in full at my newsletter, bestevidence.fyi. That will be linked in the show notes.
2 suggestions. One, if it's a really in-depth look at all the evidence, why not call it Database Cooper? And the other one is Non-Fungible DB Cooper Island.
No.
Yeah. Sure.
God. Mellencamp.
He's so happy, you guys. He's so happy.
We're back.
I mean, speaking of happy, I am happy, and you may be too, that Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is back. We're back with another Top 40 season, and this time it's the Lilith Fair 40. Who is the Lilith Fairest of them all? Mm-hmm. We are ranking 40 songs. We are already getting legitimately angry texts from friends and listeners about making them Sophie's Choice, these things. Mm-hmm. It's going to be horrible and a blast. I suggest you check it out. Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs.com or anywhere else that you get your podcasts.
All right, buckle up. Actually, I have a whole bunch of things to talk about because we were on like a mini vacation and a whole bunch of shit ended or we watched some stuff over the break. So very rapidly, I just want to give a shout out to Chris Billick, the Billick of Goods, for suggesting a BBC show that you can watch on HBO Max?
AMC Plus.
AMC Plus, called This Is Going to Hurt. Oh, that's right. You can watch the first episode on Amazon Prime and then you want to switch to Through Methods, probably, or, unless you have AMC Plus. Of course, what I meant is watch it on AMC Plus.
We got AMC Plus for this and we will continue to have it for anything else that we talk about that's on AMC Plus.
Cop. Way beyond the free trial period.
That's right.
The non-fungible free trial period.
This is a show based on a doctor's memoir, I suppose, yeah. I guess. And
he adapted it himself, it looks like.
About the UK health services and his experience in them. And it is a journey. I will not say it's light. It has comedic elements, but doesn't pull its punches. And yeah, it was really good. Ben Whishaw is the titular going to hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just sort of like a year or so in his life as a doctor in a London hospital. And I don't really want to like go into the storyline. It's just like, it was good. Yeah. Great recommendation. Chris is the guy who made us watch Taskmaster for the first time. So he's 2-2. Mm-hmm. Next up, Downton Abbey movie, the second movie.
Spoilers ahoy.
I don't really remember anything from it except spoiler. I mean, of course, everybody saw it coming. The Dowager Countess finally kicks the bucket. But I just want to say, since they're just kind of making movies that could have been 1 or 2 episodes, before everybody else gets too old to really commit to things, let's reboot Downton as Downton 1972. And then it's just basically just fast forward the whole family and how they're fucking dealing with, like, I don't know, like oil crisis and just whatever. Like, what's this computer? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Use the same actors because they do nothing to age them up. Oh, and, like, absolutely. 40 years have happened in showtime.
Yeah, just throw some flour on their hair and done.
Yep.
Obi-Wan Kenobi ended. Boy, that was a disappointment. You know, I had some good moments and set pieces, but this is a show that could not justify its existence. And it looked like shit. The best part was the sound mix shit they did when there was a big fight with Vader and his mask is half off. And it's like half James Earl Jones and half Hayden Christensen. That was neat. But like the whole show is like did not need to exist.
No.
They were just it was totally unnecessary.
It's for no one.
Super disappointed. You know what a big Star Wars fan I am. Miss Marvel, better show. And my only complaint, and I think everybody on our Discord for the podcast was sort of on the same train, as it were. Didn't mean that, like it came out, but it had a big bad element, like kind of a Thanosian stakes that seemed like they could have removed from the show and the show would have been better for it.
Yeah.
Like this seemed like it should have been a smaller, more, even more personal story than they did. But of course, it's Marvel, so, you know, it's going to happen. But at the end of it, it's like, if I can make one change, I would just remove that whole supernatural big bad element and just figure out another way to have Kamal's journey happen. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, great season. Remember, I made this happen with I Am Not a Crackpot. And they listened to it. And then they made the show I wanted, which was a Star Trek show that got back to the roots of the original series. More optimistic than we've seen. A show that didn't seem to be born out of, well, people like Batman. Let's do gritty Star Trek and see how that goes. This show is really fun. The only real dud for me was the Ren Faire episode, as I'll call it, which I understand what they were doing. They tried to split the difference between like a goofy homage to that kind of thing that happened in the original series, but also like the serious doctor drama storyline that they injected into it. And it just didn't mix and it kind of fell flat in his face. But otherwise, I thought it was a super strong series. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun.
I'm glad they made it. And Anson Mount as Pike is
amazing. He's so good. My other complaint about that Ren Faire episode, which I didn't hate as much as you did, is that like no one cares about your daughter. Like that's just a blanket statement. Like
I didn't super hate it. I just thought it was the weakest episode and I just didn't think it clicked.
Yes.
I didn't feel like they knew what they wanted out of the end of that. The rest of it was assured and they knew what they wanted out of each episode kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. But it also seemed like the, you know, the daughter in distress is such a hoary, overused plot device that I was glad that it ended the way
I was going to say, give him credit for perhaps realizing that and excising that storyline.
Totally.
The only thing, I kind of bummed that they lost the engineer. I did like that character.
Yeah,
and
he was good.
As the series goes on, they're working towards one day, it'll be the Enterprise we know. We're going to keep on losing characters we like. But that one seemed a little sudden. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Bye. See you later, Hammer. All right. That's my quick recap of everything that happened.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Erica. It is called Two Wrongs Make a Right. Erica writes, many a good show has been undone by a bad ending. Pick a show that ended badly and make it better by giving it the bad ending of a different show. For example, maybe instead of getting back together with Robin at the end of How I Met Your Mother, Ted Mosby gets stabbed by Jon Snow and dies in disgrace. Everybody wins except Ted. I'll go first. Mine's short and sweet. Instead of closing the chapter on his serial murders by getting a job as a logger in the middle of nowhere, Dexter reveals he is the bitchy blogger known as Gossip Girl.
Oh, Bobby. No. I also did that, except XOXOGC, Gossip Girl is George Costanza.
Okay.
Oh, was it a hat trick?
Yeah, I had a lumberjack one too. Except I worked it the other way. It's lost, but they all meet up as lumberjacks in the office.
Love it.
And I had another one before we pass it on to Bobby.
Okay.
And a second one, which is the Chiron, the dinosaurs never returned home, which is the dinosaurs with Quantum Leap's perfunctory ending when they were just canceled out of the blue. And they just slapped that Chiron at the end of what should have been the season finale.
Bobby.
That Quantum Leap ending is incredible, by the way. My, I don't have any of these ones, so it is a different. I thought back to the first finale that really let me down. I'm pretty forgiving about finales, but I remember the X-Files finale, the first one, not after all these reboots and everything else, which starts with Mulder going into this military base, and then he kills a super soldier, and then there's about 85 hours of a trial where they answer every question that ever happened. It was the most boring, and I love that show. But so my version is Mulder goes to the military base, and then we combine that with another alien show, ALF, from the 80s, which ended with ALF being taken by the military. And ALF is at the same military base, and Mulder and ALF get to be roommates and interview each other for as long as they want. So that is the ending of those two shows.
I was all of history's great acting robots. Acting Unit 0.8, Thespomat, David Duchovny.
Thank you.
All right, that means it is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Bobby. Take it away, Bobby.
There are some TV shows you happen to catch from the moment they air and love them right away, from the first seconds of their pilots. It's the TV equivalent of being able to say, I was into this band before they were popular. For example, our household just happened to have the TV on the night of the first episode of Bob's Burgers and loved it immediately. So when people started discovering it over the next few years, we could say, well, yes, of course, we've watched it since the beginning. Or back in 1999, I flipped on HBO to watch the first episode of a show set around where I grew up in New Jersey. So I was able to say, oh yeah, I was into The Sopranos right off the bat. Strangely, one of my current favorite shows, one of the best on TV right now, was not like that. When What We Do in the Shadows premiered in 2019, it glided like a low-flying bat right under my attention. I had missed the movie version when it was out a few years earlier, so there wasn't an already established built-in interest. Also, to be honest, I think I had a pretty apathetic feeling toward it. Oh, it's a mockumentary, but with vampires. Would it be one note, a gimmick? I should have just stopped asking so many questions and jumped into watching, but at the time, it just flew past. Looking back now, it's crazy to think I was so lethargic about starting what is one of the funniest shows on TV. I can't think of many other shows that come out of the gate with such fully formed characters and such a tight ensemble. Early in the lockdown of 2020, we finally devoured the first season just in time for the second to start. Now in its fourth, it's one of the rare shows where I can watch an episode over and over and over again. There's no shortage of classics. Considering that wealth of classic episodes, I checked out the canon and saw there is already the famous Jackie Daytona episode from season two in there. So for my presentation today, I'd like to discuss another instantly legendary one, but one that takes a slightly different format. While that episode, On the Run, has much of the group separated while Matt Berry lives his incognito life, season three's The Casino has them all together, proving in this episode that the sum of the hilarious parts makes for one of the funniest episodes of TV in recent memory. Following a frequent Tara approach to canon submissions, I will try to remain organized by presenting numbered supporting points here to explain why What We Do in the Shadows, season three, episode four, The Casino, belongs in the canon. Supporting point number one, the setup for the episode is perfect, putting our vampires out into the world, not with a specific task, but just for fun. The episode jumps right in as we learn that they have been invited on a trip to celebrate their neighbor Sean and Charmaine's anniversary. Of course, Laszlo repeatedly refers to them as clip one.
Sean and Charmaine.
Johnny!
With the joy of someone who has just discovered how to combine couple names and hasn't realized it's been overused yet. The whole house is giddy with the plans, and we learn right away what they are. Clip two.
Some call our destination a mecca of the depraved.
America's premier nocturnal playground of hedonistic debauchery.
Sin City, US of A, baby!
Fever, Atlantic City! Fever,
Atlantic City, baby!
City, baby!
Not your game, or...
Atlantic City!
As mentioned earlier, I grew up in New Jersey, so I am allowed to say this. God bless anyone who is this excited for Atlantic City. The opening not only sets up the episode, but gives us immediate taste of some classic Shadows touches. Laszlo's glorious use of language in describing the everyday, Nadja's enthusiastic singing, and we even get a not you, Guillermo, thrown in there by Nandor. Bonus points as well for having Laszlo's rendition of Viva Atlantic City switch into the show's theme song, as we just heard. Road trip episodes can certainly go wrong, but the setup here is ideal for this show. Not only are they out of their comfort zone, I mean, they have to bring their ancestral soil to even sleep out of the house, but it's such a ridiculous juxtaposition that the humor doesn't have to push too hard to land. Supporting point number two. Each cast member gets a hilarious plot line, importantly, all of which work together toward the conclusion. Seeing a ramshackle Rat Pack tribute band, Nadja assumes it's the original, Sinatra and all, and is excited because of her past with the performers, clip three.
I used to scream, ain't that a cake in the head, at every show because it was my favorite number. And also, you know, what a stupid name for a song. Frankie used to say that they should call me the voice. He'd say, Nadja, I don't know what's more of a problem, your voice or my taste in plans.
Her attempts at reconnecting with them are met by strange reactions from the singers, who were at first tickled by such an enthusiastic fan, but do begin to realize something else is going on. Nandor spends the episode on an emotional roller coaster, starting with childlike giddiness over a slot machine and winding up in an existential spiral about the insignificance of the universe. And like all existential spirals, it is sparked by a very specific pop culture reference, clip 4.
I am playing a game called the Big Bang Theory game. So hypnotic. It has been its grips. Ah! 2 Leonards and a Rage. I need 3 Rages! Again.
I won! Bazinga!
Bazinga is the war cry of Sheldon, their tall leader.
If Bazinga is the war cry of Sheldon doesn't make this episode canon worthy on its own, I don't know what could. This leads to a dark realization, however. Clip 7.
Do you know what I have been wondering, Colin Robinson?
What's that?
Why do they call it the Big Bang Theory?
It's about the creation of the universe.
The what? And in a single instant, my world was turned upside down.
The fact that the name of the TV show would lead to a Colin Robinson tutorial on the origin of the universe makes it all the better. Speaking of Colin Robinson, I don't think I've laughed harder at the TV in the past few years as when we learn what he has been up to for much of this episode, clip 5.
You know how it is when you have the binge watch blinders on. I got caught up in a show that I'm obsessed with, and they only air it here at the hotel.
Roll the dice, spin that wheel.
Anyway, housekeeping came in, and I didn't notice what she was doing.
The sushi's raw. Catch a show and hit the spa.
This is a podcast, so we can't see his face in that clip while he sings, but the hypnotic tone in his singing voice clues you in. Of course, his obsession with that song and show means he misses it when the cleaning staff clears out the ancestral soil from the room, making it impossible for the vampires to sleep and causing them to begin losing their powers. Discovering this, Laszlo finds he can't even do one of his best tricks, clip 6.
I can feel my powers fading, but... Oh, fucking sparrow, the lamest of all birds.
And that's too bad because Laszlo, almost more than anyone, has been excited for this trip. His plotline here is an ideal expansion of one of the long-running points from the show, his pure friendship with Sean from next door. He truly likes him and is thrilled when they are included in each other's lives. For example, see Season 1's Super Bowl Superb Owl episode for the birth of their friendship. When he has to take advantage of Sean for money in the episode, his journey to make it right is both funny and shows a different side of the character. And finally, and unfortunately it's always finally for Guillermo, there is Guillermo who must save them all with a globe-trotting soil-gathering trip at the last minute. Despite trying but failing earlier in the episode to treat him better, the vampires are back to their old ways as they recuperate in clip 8.
Before we get started, should we go around the group, see how everyone's energy is doing?
No, or? Fuck off.
Okay.
Back to normal then.
So at 6:47, I'm going to go down to the box office. I'm going to buy our tickets for the fight.
Yes, Guillermo, we've got it.
Okay. Just want to make sure everyone knows what the plan is.
Honestly, sometimes I just think you love the sound of your own voice.
Okay, you know what? Let's go. Let's do the plan.
I wasn't really listening, so if you wouldn't mind repeating it.
All of these plot lines culminate in an Ocean 11 style plan to save the day, which goes off without a hitch for most of the people involved, at least. And that leads me to supporting point number 3. Perhaps a bit minor compared to the others, but I love what the show does with references to other pop culture properties. The Ocean's 11 homage is just enough without it becoming a flat-out parody of it and woven into the plot seamlessly. The running Big Bang Theory joke is great because it is not simply shooting fish in a barrel, a cool show like this one making fun of one that has been the butt of many a joke over the years. It doesn't take the easy way out ever, and the references are all the better for it. Supporting point 4. All those previously mentioned plot lines intertwine seamlessly and culminate perfectly as a whole. I do love the episodes of the show where the characters go off on their own. I was this close to writing about Nandor's time in the 1980s exercise cult, for example. But for me, when they're all together, chiming off each other's lines, experiencing the world as a group, that's the best. Each of their unique sensibilities complements each other's. Sometimes it's even hard to keep up as their lines cascade off each other. You'd be hard-pressed to find another ensemble on TV right now where the cast isn't in such perfect sync. The Casino is a perfect example of this. Supporting point number 5, the culmination of the plan at the end of the episode where the vampires rig a boxing match. I won't spoil it here in case there are listeners who haven't watched, but suffice it to say, I laughed and screamed at the TV. And finally, supporting point number 6, the comedic tension between the vampires' amoral ways. I mean, they have some code of morals, I think, but they are, after all, draining people of blood on a regular basis. And their urge to be good elevates this episode. They truly just want to go on the trip, have fun, and celebrate their neighbors. Laszlo's crisis over his friendship with Sean raises the stakes, no pun intended, because he does actually consider him a best friend. Not behavior you'd expect from someone who regularly demeans Guillermo or, as just mentioned, drains people of blood on a regular basis. The Casino is an episode of one of the best shows on TV at its best. The proof, for me at least, is that I watched it for the 5th and 6th time in prepping for this presentation, and I still laughed out loud throughout. The reasons discussed here, I hope, are plenty, but in the end, it's just so funny. I hope you will heed the war cry of Sheldon and induct the Casino into the canon.
Thank you, Bobby. Sarah, Dave and I have watched this more, so why don't you go first and we'll follow up.
Oh my God. This is one of those things where, like, I got to the bottom of a sheet of paper writing down quotes and I was like 7 minutes into the episode and I was like, okay, I'm just going to let it wash over me like ancestral soil. But I definitely have to start the show from the beginning and like get into it because this, like, it made me want to keep watching, which is a, you know, canon criterion number, like it's in the top 3 for me. And there are so many good lines. The moment that you speak of, which I will not spoil, was like, oh, holy shit. I mean, and there were a bunch of times where I like rewound a few seconds. And then sometimes you actually have to contemplate these scenes like they're a painting. Like, here's what's happening in the foreground. There's what's happening in the background. Like, you know, like Laszlo's money return caper finally goes off. And then there's a split second of his best friend in the back of the shop being like, put it all on lucky number 12.
Exactly.
You're like, oh my God, gorgeous. This is also in some episodes that I've watched, and I have seen a few, like Colin Robinson sometimes like can take a while to, I think he took a while to come online, but this is such a good episode for him. Like, I like to walk around. I like to stare. Like, I think I'm going to stitch that on a pillow because I also like those things. His face whenever he's taking a Polaroid, gorgeous. And then this hotel TV, like, we have been to Vegas enough times and gotten the like hotel ads stuck in our heads and made up alternate non-fungible lyrics to them in the elevator at the Luxor, for instance. This happened to a friend.
See, it's fun to say fungible, isn't it?
It is. That's why it has the word fun right in it. And also the word jib. Not sure what that means. And like the little references to like that they go from Staten Island to Jersey and like the people that they cast actually have the correct accents and like are screaming at the Knicks the same way someone, you know, from these places would. The travelogue of Atlantic City B-roll, which is like all the shitty parts of the Monopoly board that cost no money. It's just like pawn shops and stuff. The ring-a-ding-ding gag, like, I stand corrected.
Yes.
So good. It's so good, but it's also so, it's so dense, but it's also like not ever standing back from itself and being like, eh. Like, there's some episodes in the first season where you feel like the show is still not totally confident in what it's doing enough to like close up the gaps in the, like, close up the weave of the show, of the script. And here that is not an issue. I wrote down so many things, like Guillermo's performance. He's like, you know what? Let's just go. I wasn't really listed. It's so good. It's so good. We all have interests. It's true. This was a wonderful presentation. It was a delight to watch this episode. And I'm pretty sure everyone knows what my vote is going to be. But let's hear what Tara and or Dave have to say.
This was a great selection from season 3. I reviewed season 4 for Vanity Fair, which we'll also link in the show notes. And one of my complaints about season 3 and 4 is how much the characters are siloed from each other. The whole plot line with the Vampiric Council, which had storylines in season 3 for Nadia and Nandor, so they were spending a lot of time together, which is fine, but like there wasn't all the mixing. So we definitely, and maybe that was partly to set up, you know, what was going to happen with Laszlo and Colin Robinson later. But still, this episode is strong, as you said, Bobby, because it shows all of the characters all in the same place, other than Guillermo, not you, Guillermo, for a long period of time. And like, that's the strength of the show. And you made so many well-organized, excellent points. I just want, especially that each cast member gets a plot line. And the one where Laszlo, who is mostly just a shithead, actually gets a sweet one because he really does love Sean. He wants to give him this money. He doesn't want to steal from him. He understands this is a big deal. And like, but then giving him all of this cash at the tables, it's like they don't lean on it. Like the vampires are already walking away while mm-hmm. we hear Sean put it all on lucky number 12.
Yeah.
Because as also previously established in this episode, they're fans of Ocean's 12 over Ocean's 11, which they say at the initial dinner where they're all out together, which is so funny and stupid.
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
And refer to the original as the Ocean 12's prequel.
The prequel, exactly.
It's so good.
The ring-a-ding-ding thing is great. I'm pretty sure the last time I saw you, you weren't Chinese. Ring-a-ding-ding, I stand corrected. And then the plot where they're trying to change their relationship with Guillermo at Nandor's direction and like appreciate him more as a bodyguard versus a familiar. And Colin Robinson is like coming up with the solution of what he keeps hearing at every shitty job he's ever had, which is we're all a big family here, and keeps coming back to it. And it's like, it's perfect. It's smart. It's dumb. It really gives everyone a moment. And you're right, the way the plot lines all braid together at the end in a way that is hilarious and shocking is exactly what you want from this show. And so even though season 3 is not my favorite, this is 100% the best episode of that season. So excellent choice and great presentation. Dave?
Yeah, that was the only thing I was going to add, is that season 3 as a whole, I think, is their weakest season. But this is definitely the strongest episode of that season for all the reasons that Bobby said. It was just like, it's a very cohesive storyline that gives everybody their moment, but also is a vampire stew. So it just like works. It works so well, and it is really funny. And that ending shock moment is just like, I forgot about it, honestly.
I did too.
And when it happened, I actually like cackled. It was really great. So I won't waste any of more time. Just say, Bobby, you nailed it. Really funny episode.
All right.
And they nailed it also on the production side. So let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting, canon worthy? Yes, nay?
Yes, I will give this a feather from a female crow. It is a yes for me.
Dark.
I forgot to even say the part where Nandor doesn't realize the Big Bang Theory slot machine is based on a Big Bang Theory show, which he praises for having really captured the spirit of the slot machine.
So good.
Yeah, obviously a yes for me as well.
Yeah, me too. That means What We Do in the Shadows, Season 3, Episode 4, The Casino. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to reveal the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It is the Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, ergo me, Sarah D. Bunting, because they're getting revivals at Hanna-Barbera Studios Europe from the original creator, Craig McCracken, and that live-action Powerpuff Girls is still officially in active development, so it's like a troika of Powerpuff, Foster's, fun. I also like cereal. It's going to be great.
Didn't they start filming that and they're like, ugh, they're not working?
Yes,
and then they
that's
stopped.
Why it's, I put officially, like, it's still a going concern, but kind of not really, like, one of the stars yeah. is left.
And the last animated Powerpuffs didn't have the creator on board, right? Because that
that's
was really
right.
shitty.
Yeah,
that was really
so
bad.
This would be preferred.
Great.
Yes.
And our loser of the week?
Well, yesterday on Monday, when Dave and I sat down to do our prep for this episode, I commented that there was trouble a-brewing, according to Twitter, between Desus and Mero, the titular stars of the Showtime late-night talk show Desus and Mero. When I finally got to read my feeds, I saw that it was, like, hugely covered, that there were all these sort of hints being dropped on Reddit and on Twitter that they were the two stars were beefing. And by about 5 p.m., it was officially announced that Showtime had canceled the show because the two stars were going to be pursuing separate creative endeavors. And I admit I raised an eyebrow when I saw that Deezus was going to be guest hosting Jimmy Kimmel Live alone this month, but I did not see this coming. And this is officially the shortest time between me learning about something scandalous from the Who Weekly Discord and it being proved catastrophically extremely true. It was like hours later. And so this is a bummer, not just because I really like the show and it had a lot of fans, but also for our friend and past and hopefully now future, because he has more time on his hands, guest Josh Gondelman, who was the head writer of that show. So RIP. All of the archives are still up on the Showtime app. You can watch them, and you should, because it was a very funny show. So I still don't know what happened between them, but I will be keeping an eye out for some kind of reported story about what went on.
On the positive side, I just really love when arguments and disagreements are referred to as beefs.
Beef.
Puts me in mind of Sarah D. Bunting just talking about beefs as fart, which is the funniest use of the word beef.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that should be at the top of the dictionary list.
To be clear, the beef between Deezus and Mero is very different from the beef that has been enjoyed in steak form by Bobby and Jeff.
There's only one surefire way back into a woman's heart and parts beyond. I speak, of course, of karaoke.
Even a do you know what time it is?
Just to get it out of the way, because Sarah just like her turned white as a sheet. This is not the drunk as episode. You will not have to sing.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God. That's what I started to freak out about.
This is the third game time of our current season. The scores are Sarah with one, Tara with one, value guest still looking for that first point. Today we are playing gratuitous karaoke moments from Mike Seifert, who earns himself an extra credit topic. He writes, if a TV show wants to show us a character in an embarrassing situation, letting their hair down, or having an emotional epiphany, what better way to do it than a karaoke scene? In this game, I will play you an audio clip from a TV karaoke scene. You have to name the show that it is from. If you need a hint, I will provide you the names of the actors who portrayed the characters that are singing in the audio clip. 2 points before the hint, 1 point after the hint. You only get one guess.
Got it.
Let's go to the Steel Mills situation. Steel Mills, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Valued guest has 6 Steel Mills plus Eric's meal for a total of 7. I also have 7. Sarah D. Bunting
has like 80.
Has 13.
13, okay.
Lucky number 13.
All right, let's throw it to Picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Bobby's up top. Right. Then we'll go to Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play gratuitous karaoke moments?
Yes.
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 All right, Bobby. Here is your first karaoke audio clip. You're going to name the TV show. You have a hint available. Here we go.
In every beat of my heart, we got something going on. Tender love is blind. It requires a dedication. All this love we feel needs no conversation. Divided together, making love with each other,
All right, we just heard Islands in the Stream. What show is that from, Bobby?
I think, is that The Office?
It is The Office. Nice. That is good for 2 points. Well done. Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready for your first karaoke audio clip?
Yes.
Here we go.
Happy graduation. If I should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll
She's a
go.
Whitney boy? Oh, I think it's Dolly inspired.
But I know I'll think of you each step of the way.
All right, you heard a clip. What show is that from? Or we got a hint available if you're not sure.
I think that's the Gilmore Girls.
Is it the Gilmore Girls? Yes. I Will Always Love You. Lauren Graham singing there. Tara.
Yes.
Don't go breaking my heart.
Tried.
Oh, honey, if I get restless.
Baby, you're not the kind.
It turns out some things are worth preserving.
Thank God for that voiceover. How I Met Your Mother.
Yes. Yes, you will enjoy some context clues. I will say that Mike has broken this up into easy, challenging, and hard, and okay, we are in the easy zone.
Okay.
Back to Bobby.
And the thought of loving you is getting so exciting.
Sky rockets in flight.
Hang on, maybe.
Afternoon delight.
I literally just sent this clip to a friend in the text. It's Arrested Development.
It is Arrested Development, yes. Afternoon delight. Hey. Wait a second.
More than steak friends, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, to Sarah D. Bundy.
So I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream at the top of my lungs, what's going on?
Uh-oh. Callaway.
Yeah. All right, that is What's Up. What show is that from? Got a hint at your disposal if you need it, Sarah.
Can I hear the clip again, actually?
So I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream at the top of my lungs, what's going on?
Uh-oh. Callaway.
Yeah.
That did not help. Could I have the hint, please?
You heard Andy Samberg and Craig Robinson in that clip.
Andy Samberg and Craig Robinson. Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yes, good for 1 point there. 1 point. To Tara.
Yes.
The winner takes it all! Well,
that's you!
The loser standing
yes!
Small.
Yes! Let's go, let's go!
Oh,
beside the
yeah,
victory!
Yeah, up there. Yeah.
That's her destiny!
Woo!
I was in your arms.
Yeah.
Thinking I belong there.
I figured it made sense. Building the offense.
That's Better Call Saul. I recapped that episode for Previously.tv and I remember saying, and I still feel it's mean to make Bob Odenkirk, who is kind of tone deaf, sing next to semi-professional singer Michael McKean of Spinal Tap fame.
Everybody has one question left in our easy zone. This one is for Bobby.
All right. I've been away from you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love is real. Swanee, you're calling me your crazy river. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee.
I'm 80% sure. I'm going to just take a swing and say, is that Curb Your Enthusiasm?
You are correct. Curb Your Enthusiasm. All right. The full 2 points. That's Larry David there singing Swanee. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your last easy question.
Just call me Angel of the morning, Angel. Touch my cheek before you leave.
Hint.
Sofia Vergara.
Modern Family?
Yes. Good for 1 point. All right, here is our last easy audio clip for Tara.
Phone rings in the middle of the night. My father yells, what you gonna do with your life? Oh, daddy dear, you know you're still number one. But girls, they wanna have fun.
Look at me. Not her. For us.
Hide her in my house. All right. Tara, what's that show?
The only show on television that I know that has a Sealy in it. That's Bones, I think.
Yes, it is Bones.
Nice.
Yes, there you go. 2 points there to end off the easy portion. Let's get the current scores, please, Tara.
It's very, very close. Sarah has 4 points. Bobby and I are tied with 6.
All right. Let's get back to it. We now are in our challenging part of our game. Bobby, you're up first.
Oh,
day. You know why? I'm gonna get out of my chair.
Oh my god, this made a big leap from easy to middle. I'm gonna need the clue on that.
The actor you heard there is Scott Porter. Scott Porter. Do you know who Scott Porter is?
Sarah getting ready to steal meal.
I do not. Sopranos.
That's a good guess. The circumstances. Looked like Sarah was made the connection.
Nope. Sarah was frozen. So.
All right, Tara, do you know?
Yeah, it's Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights. Correct. Oh,
I've never seen an
episode
of that show.
Being sung there.
You should watch it. It's a good show.
All right, Sarah Day Bending, here is your next clip.
Look at this guy.
Standing very low. The ship is waiting. All systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced. But the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. The countdown starts.
Oh, man. You can't make this stuff up.
I feel like I've seen this scene. I'm sorry. You know can what? I hear the can you, I hear the clip again?
Yeah, you can hear the clip again. And when, like, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, right. Here we go. Here's the clip again for Sarah.
Look at this guy.
Standing very low. The ship is waiting. All systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced. But the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. Countdown starts.
Oh man, you can't make this stuff up.
Fuck. Hint.
David Costabile.
Costabile?
It's. I have a pronunciation key, and it says David Costabile. So I'm going to assume Mr. Seifert has.
Oh,
given you
gotcha. With his Birks and socks, bless his heart, Gail. Is that Breaking Bad?
It is Breaking Bad. Yes, I was going to say the additional hint is I believe they're watching a video of somebody doing karaoke in that scene.
Yes,
I mean that song of all things, gorgeous.
Back to Tara.
Who's the Black Friday dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks?
Shaq!
You're damn right.
Who's the cat that won't cop out when there's danger all about? Shaq!
Right on.
And here we discover that challenging and easy is relative to who's submitting the game.
The first time I ever heard this song was in this episode of The Simpsons. So, B, when I finally heard the real song, it was quite an education.
Yeah.
That's The Simpsons.
Simpsons is correct. Back to Bobby.
These vagabond shoes.
You're an ass, you know that? No, keep playing.
Are longing to stray. There's word, no right. And get around the heart of it. New York, New York. I that the affair was one thing. I mean, I forgave you because on some small level I thought that you were in love with her, and now I find out you were just groping people at parties. Top of the heap.
I have a sense, but I think I need the hint on this.
The actor singing there is Terry Hatcher.
Oh, is it Desperate Housewives?
Yes. Desperate Housewives is your 1 point answer. Back to Sarah D.
The
Bunting.
First time in his life Dave has ever called her by her real name and not Terry Thatcher.
Yep. Thank you for pointing it out. I will take those kudos.
There used to be a grand tower alone on the sea.
You became the light on the dark side of me. Did you know the light that you shine can be seen?
Hint.
Joel McHale and Jim Rash.
Jim Rash. Yes. Community?
Yes, Community is correct.
Jim Rash is the dean.
Gotcha.
Tara.
And my buddy.
And your buddy, who just had a birthday.
All right, Tara, here is your next audio clip.
I find
find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world.
I know this one too, and I can't pull it. Hint.
KJ Apa and Camila Mendez.
Riverdale.
Stay out of Riverdale.
All right, everybody's last challenging / medium question coming at you. This one is for Bobby.
Learned the truth at 17. That love was meant for beauty queens.
Hey, you're bumming us out.
High school girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired.
I don't remember this exact moment, but that sounds a lot like Tina Fey, so I'm going to say 30 Rock.
2 points. Good
nice.
Guess. All right, this is question 17.
The Spread Eagle.
And it is for Sarah.
He got friendly, holding my hand.
She got friendly, down in the sand.
He was sweet, just turned 18.
Well, he was good, you know what I mean.
Oh, summer heat, boy and girl meet. But all the summer nights.
No idea, hint?
Amy Poehler and John Glazer.
Oh God, I was way off.
I guess Parks and Rec?
Yes. Did you think it was Wet Hot in American Summer?
No, I thought it was. I thought that sounded like Lauren Ash. I thought it was Superstore.
All right, last of our challenging questions. It is for Tara. Are you ready, Tara?
Yeah.
Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by?
Friends.
It is Friends. Yes, Picky smiling on you there. All right, that is it for our medium. We're about to go into the hard section. But before we do that, let's get the current scores.
Okay, Sarah has 7. Bobby has 9. I have 11. It's very close still.
All right, let's get right back into it. Back to Bobby. Here is your first hard clip.
'Cause your sex takes me to bed.
Why is that weirdo staring at you and singing about sex?
Because he's my weirdo. I'll be right back.
Ooh. Your sex takes me to paradise and it shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 'Cause you make me feel like I've been locked out of
All right, Locked Out of Heaven is the song there. Do you know the show? I can give you the actor singing there if you're not sure.
I would like the hint.
All right, we got Brett Dyer and Gina Rodriguez.
Is it Jane the Virgin?
It is Jane the Virgin. Good for 1 point. To Sarah D. Bunting.
Homeward bound. I wish I was. Homeward bound. Home. Where my thoughts escaping, home, where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently for me.
It sounds familiar, but I can't quite pull it. Could I get the hint, please?
Justin Theroux.
The Leftovers?
Yes, Leftovers, good for 1. All right, Tara, you ready for your first clip of the hard section?
Yes.
Lord, I never drew first, but I drew from blood.
No one saw.
So
call me younger.
Hint?
Kristen Bell and Ted Danson.
The Good Place.
The Good Place is correct. We're back to Bobby.
Oh, God.
All right, I'll give you one hint before you go. The 4 people singing there.
There's 4 people singing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to need the hint.
All right. Yeah. America Ferrera, Nicole Sakura, Lauren Ash, Kelly Schumann.
Superstore.
Superstore, yes. Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, Mandy, well, you came and you gave without taking, but I sent you away, oh, Mandy, but you kissed me and stopped me from shaking, and I need you today, oh, Mandy, for a game and you gave
man,
without
I'll do
taking.
Anything to save a life.
I will say that I know you have watched this show.
Can I hear the clip again? Sorry to hold up the show here.
Oh, Mandy, well, you came and you gave without taking.
All right, I got
but
it.
But I sent you away, oh, Mandy.
Poor Boreanaz. Is this Angel?
Yeah, it is. 2 points. Nicely done. Two Tara.
Yep.
Lollipop, 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 lollipop.
Cheers.
Cheers is correct. Lollipop, lollipop from Cheers. All right, everybody's last question is coming at you, so let's get the scores, please, Tara.
Okay. Sarah has 10, Bobby has 11, I have 14.
All right. Let's get right back into it. Bobby, your last clip is here.
Philip Hughes, me, your pet. You don't bring my evidence. Where there is love, you.
Oh, it's like on the tip of my tongue.
Let me give you another hint. I never seen the original episode this was in, and at first I thought it was Miss Piggy. It is
I
not
did
Miss
too.
Piggy.
Me too.
No, it's not Miss Piggy. Okay. It's not the Muppet related.
Okay, thank you for that.
Sure.
I'll take the hint.
Okay. Will Smith, do you know it yet?
Oh, I guess it's got to be Fresh Prince, right?
For sure. There you go. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Ribeiro and Lewis there singing from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'll be there, Jackson 5. All right. Last clip for Sarah D. Bunting.
What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
War!
Good God, you all.
This is all a big joke to you.
Hint.
Ben Savage and Danielle Fishel.
That doesn't help. Benson.
Anybody steel mill on that one? No?
Steel mill.
All right, steel mill.
Why I know this, I don't know, but is it Boy Meets World?
It is Boy Meets
Gorgeous.
World.
Gorgeous.
Well point
done. Way too old to get that reference, yes.
And our last clip of regulation is for Tom.
Raise your hopeful voice. You have a choice. You made it now.
It was really great.
Oh my God, I've definitely seen this too, but I need a hint.
Will Forte and Jason Sudeikis.
That's The Last Man on Earth.
It is Last Man on Earth, correct for 1 point, and that is regulation, so let's get the scores here at the end of our game.
Everyone had a very strong game. Sarah finished with 10, Bobby 13, I barely squeaked out a win with 50.
All right, let's just get rid of this tiebreaker so we don't waste it. First person to shout out the correct show will win a stew meal for future use. Sarah, you particularly want to pay attention because you are running a little low. Here we go. I will start playing it. Feel free to shout it out whenever you want. You don't need to wait for the clip to end.
This is also dedicated to my goddaughter, Nora. I love you.
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso is correct. Didn't even need to hear the song.
Well done.
Context, steak friend Bobby Krutt takes that one. All right, that is it.
Oh, boy. Congrats, Tara.
Third game goes to Tara.
Bravo.
Tara!
Tara. Tara. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We hid in your headphones to talk to you about frogging Hider in my house before going around the dial with stops at 100 Places to Party Before You Die, Married at First Sight, Somebody Somewhere, Reservation Dogs, D.B. Cooper, Where Are You, Interro Bang, Downton Abbey, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and Miss Marvel. Bobby beat the odds to get What We Do in the Shadows, The Casino into the can, and we crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Mike. Next up is Great Beginnings on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next ESG Prime, the ugliest house in America. I love summer programming. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana.
Good God, you all.
Sarah D. Bunting.
It's time for Night Nights.
And Bobby Krutt.
Viva Atlantic City.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Fungible Great. I know.
This Big Bang Theory is really very good. Very faithful to the slot machine.
For the last time, can you turn this TV down!
This dog can be a real Leonard sometimes, can't he?